Let's talk about money some more. We started this last week, a series on biblical finances. This week we're going to look at Proverbs, just all the stuff about money in Proverbs. That's what we're going to look at, because there's a ton of stuff. We're going to start with 1 Kings. If you want to talk about money, it's probably a decent idea to look at Solomon and his advice for a number of reasons, which are enumerated in this text, and we're going to look at some texts in Ecclesiastes about Solomon. Please the Lord that Solomon had asked this. This is 1 Kings 3. And God said to him, because you have asked this, what did he ask for? Wisdom, right? And not asked for long life or riches or life of your enemies. Then you have asked for understanding to discern what is right. Behold, I do now according to your word. I give you a wise and discerning mind, none so that none like you has been before and none like you shall rise after you. The wisest person who ever lived. I give you also what you have not asked, riches and honor, so that no king shall compare with you in all your days. If you will walk in my ways, keep my statutes and my commandments as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your days. So, what do we see about Solomon here? He had wisdom, discernment, understanding, and he also had a bunch of money. He was just super rich, right? So, he is the guy who is both wise and rich and can tell us about money. He's the one that can tell us all about money, right? Now, later on in his life, right, in Ecclesiastes, a couple of things go on here. I, the preacher, have been king over Israel and Jerusalem. I applied my heart to seek and to search out wisdom in all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given the children of man to be busy with. Now, Solomon, later on in life, he was a bitter old man. That's all the only way to describe it. He was a bitter old man. Because his riches and his wisdom had not led him to the place that he thought they would lead him. And so Ecclesiastes, he says in verse 16, I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom. Now he says that I have acquired, he was given great wisdom, surpassing all who were in Jerusalem before me. And my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And then in 2:9, I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem, and my wisdom remained with me. So God didn't retract. I don't think God retracted his wisdom even after he went off the deep end. So he is wealthy and he's wise. And so Proverbs is basically a lot of his musings about life. His Proverbs, that's what they are, they're Proverbs. And the book of Proverbs, as we go through the book of Proverbs, he has a lot to say about money. Because he had a lot of money. He had a ton of money. And he also was able to observe and look at what happened in people's lives with money and how did they act and what happened with them. And so as he's giving this advice, not only to his son, but to the children of Israel, which they obviously collected, the people of Israel collected this writing for their holy texts, right? This incredible wisdom of Solomon. And we're going to look at wisdom of one other guy too. This is, I think, why we should look at Proverbs when we talk about money. It comes from a place of practicality, right? So let's begin with some practical observations. These are just observations that he noticed about the way things usually go. These are not moral judgments. These are just, I've observed life, and here's what I've discovered. Proverbs 19, 4 through 6. Wealth brings many new friends, but a poor man is deserted by his friends. You see this, you read this a lot in the lottery. When somebody wins the lottery and suddenly all these family members that they didn't know they had, I'm your third cousin once removed on your father's side, like, because you won a bunch of money and I would like some of that money. A false witness will not go, I've got this sandwich in there, right? A false witness will not go unpunished. He who breathes out lies will not escape. Many seek the favor of a generous man, and everyone is a friend to a man who gives gifts. Proverbs 13, 7 and 8, one pretends to be rich yet has nothing. Another pretends to be poor yet has great wealth. The ransom of a man's life is his wealth, but a poor man hears no threats. Who's going to kidnap a poor guy? He's not going to get anything out of that, right? The risk to reward ratio is not there. These are not moral judgments. These are observations. And what do we observe when we look at, and we can see this today, right? Money makes people crazy. That's what it does. It drives us insane. And it creates a lot of bad relationships, and it couldn't create good relationships if we let it. But mostly, people go crazy over money. What is it that causes this observation? What is it that causes this aspect of his observations? Why is this how it goes? Well, the problem of loving money and greed, right? Why suddenly you've never... Who are you? You're my third cousin once removed on my father's side. I think that's what I said earlier. Why haven't you talked to me in 20 years? Why have you suddenly shown up? Because I have money and you want my money, right? That's what is happening. Proverbs 11, 1 through 4, we looked at this last week, the love of money. A false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. When pride comes, then comes the disgrace, but with the humble is wisdom. The integrity of the upright guides them, but the crookedness of the treacherous destroys them. The riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. And then later in 15:27, whoever is greedy for unjust gain troubles his own household, but he who hates bribes will live. We see a bunch of things in this text. We see what? We see pride. No, why did nobody tell me that wasn't the right verse? We see pride. We see the crookedness, right? We see whoever is greedy for unjust gain. This comes from loving money, right? I want more money. And so I'm crooked and I'm prideful and I'm greedy and I do wrong things and I behave in a bad way. And the idea of the false balance, why would you do a false balance? Because I want to cheat this other person out of this transaction, whatever the transaction is. I want to come out ahead in that transaction. So I'm gonna make the scales not equal. And then what is the result of that? Whoever is greedy troubles his own household. And ultimately, riches are not gonna profit in the day of wrath. Right? Not going to do any good, but this is the core problem, right? This is the problem with money. Now we're going to have this. Next time, tell me if I'm not reading what's on the screen, guys. Proverbs 37 through 9. Two things I ask of you. This is not Solomon. I cheated. The last section of Solomon is the augur. We're told it's the augur. It's a different guy. But Israel had collected these wise sayings, and this guy apparently had some wise stuff to say. Two things I ask of you, deny them not to me before I die. Remove far from me falsehood and lying. Give me neither poverty or riches. Feed me with the food that is needful, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. He doesn't want to be rich. He doesn't want to be poor. He just want to have what he needs. Why? What's going to happen if he has a lot of riches? I don't really need God, right? This is, in fact, the primary problem with this is the epitome of a first world problem. This is the problem with living in America and a lot of Europe and the Scandinavian countries and some parts of other parts of the world. The level of wealth has gone up so much proportionately. Why do people need God? Nobody needs God. I have what I need. I'm super wealthy. I got all sorts of stuff. I don't have any lack, and I have everything I could ever want. Why? What is this idea? I would say, who is the Lord? The Lord's not necessary. That's the danger, right, of this. Now we're going to come back to the idea of being poor. Note the idea of poorness as well. It's not just about being rich, but I don't want to be in poverty either, and this goes to what we talked about this morning, right? Lest I would have the temptation to steal, right? I would profane the name of my God. God, why have you abandoned me? You're not giving away what I need, and now I'm going to steal because I don't have what I need. So there's also a problem in the poorness, right? And what does that lead us to do in a couple of ways? Proverbs 22, 26 through 27, be not one of those who gives pledges, who put up security for debts. If you have nothing with which to pay, why should your bed be taken from you? Proverbs 22:7, the rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is the slave to the lender. This is the problem with the poverty part, right? Because the being not having the money we want is what leads us to do these things. And what is he saying? He's essentially saying what? Don't buy stuff you don't have money for. That's what he's saying. It's pretty simple, really. I don't know if you guys watch Dave Ramsey videos, but this is one of Dave Ramsey's big points. Stop buying stuff you can't afford. This is what happens. The borrower rules. No, the lender. What did he say there? I'm going to not miss this. Oh, the borrower is the slave. I was like, that doesn't sound right when I'm quoting it. The borrower is the slave of the lender, right? He has that thing over you, that debt. And what does he say about pledges and security? What is he saying? I don't have the money to buy this thing, but let me put up this property that I have as a security. And then if I can't pay it, then you can take the property. And what does Solomon say? You're going to lose the property. Don't buy stuff. This is the problem with the poverty, right? As we get into this problem. And fundamentally, both of these things, rich and poor, come back to what? Being content and satisfied with what we have. if we're not content and satisfied with what we have, this is what it leads us into. And if we have this love of money, this greed that I want more, 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 more. And why the author says, I think, I don't want to be rich or poor. I just want to have what I need. That's what's going to put me in the sweet spot of I'm not going to be led to forsake God because I don't need him. And I'm not going to be led to sin or to do these things because I don't have enough. Just give me what I need and no more. So what did Solomon recommend to avoid this? Because he does spend a lot of time. And as he's giving advice to his son, he spends a lot of time talking about a couple of ideas that we're going to look at. One, Proverbs 6, 6 through 11, go to the ant, O sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief, officer, or ruler, she prepares her bread in the summer, gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber and want like an armed man. What is he saying in comparing the ant? The ant doesn't need any oversight. Nobody needs to tell the ant what to do. They just do it. They are work. And the idea of being a self-starter is really what this is, right? Of working and being diligent. There's going to be so many texts we're going to read today. So many texts about diligence and hard work. Proverbs 10, 4 through 5, a slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. He who gathers in summer is a prudent son. He who sleeps in harvest is a son who brings shame. I'm just going to read all these in a row. 19:15, slothfulness casts into a deep sleep. An idle person will suffer hunger. 21:5, the plans of the diligent surely lead to abundance, but everyone who is hasty comes only to poverty. 12:11, whoever works his hand will have plenty, or works his land will have plenty of bread, but he who follows worthless pursuits lacks sense. What is Solomon saying in this? Money and riches and wealth, okay, that's, and all the love of money and stuff, that's what part of what we talked about, but you've got to work hard. Be diligent. Work to get what you need, right? That's what he's talking about here. Being and a lot of farming language. Israel was an agrarian society. They had a lot of herds and they did a lot of farming. I don't know. We don't do it. Some of us do still, but most of us are not going to do that kind of work, obviously. But we're going to do some work. We're going to do some kind of work, whatever it happens to be. The idea of working and not being lazy or slothful. That's what's going to lead you into the poverty. And what's the problem with poverty? You're going to be tempted to sin. You're going to be tempted to buy things that you can't afford. You're to take out these loans that will put you in as a slave of the lender. You're going to be tempted to put up security, things you can't really afford to do, but you're going to have to do them because you haven't worked. Like, you need to work. And of course, we know, obviously, sometimes stuff happens in life. And one of the things about Proverbs is these are generalities. Oh, I should probably make this disclaimer. That clock is just not right. That's why I went long this morning, guys. That clock is incorrect. It's not my fault, I promise. Proverbs is a book of generalities, right? We know that obviously sometimes people work hard and they still, life happens, a number of bad situations could arise, and through no fault of your own, you have worked hard, you have been diligent, and still you end up in poverty because we live in a fallen world, right? Things are not perfect. Things are not ideal. And there's a lot of bad things about the aspect of the world that we live in that comes from sin, and that could be somebody cheating you, could be natural disaster, could be just time and chance, could be bad things that happen, could be a sudden illness that wipes out your savings, you have to pay medical bills. We know all that, obviously, but the general principle still holds true, right? You don't work. What does Paul say? If a man won't work, let him not eat. The importance of being diligent. I'm going to skip the next two, but we're going to read 21, 25, and 26. The desire of a sluggard kills him, for his hand refused to labor. All day long he craves and craves, but the righteous gives and does not hold back. As we think about riches and wealth and material possessions, we looked at this morning too. Let the thief no longer steal, but work. Why? What did we look at? I didn't plan it. It just sort of worked out this way. In Ephesians 4, so that he will have some to give. That's the same here, right? That your working is not just so that you will accumulate wealth and riches and all this stuff, but you work hard and you're diligent so that you can give and give. The generous gives and gives, right? He does not hold back. What does the sluggard do? He craves and he craves. I want, I want, I want, I want. And at that point, it doesn't matter how much money you have. You're never going to be satisfied if you're just craving and craving and craving. If you're just an endless, bottomless pit of this love of money. We looked at that last night, or the last Sunday night, rather. So we see also the importance of generosity. Proverbs 14, 20 through 21. The poor is disliked even by his neighbor, but the rich has many friends. Whoever despises his neighbor is a sinner, but blessed is he who is generous to the poor. Not just about accumulate, and we find ourselves sometimes in possession of great wealth. You want to avoid the love of money and the greed that's going to lead to the problems that we talked about at the beginning. Be generous, right? Proverbs 28, 27. Whoever gives to the poor will not want, but he who hides his eyes will get many a curse. I like that idea of hiding. What is that talking about? Well, if you see it, this would be like if you were walking, and we do this sometimes, don't we? You're walking down the street and you see a beggar, and what do you do? I don't want to look, I can't look at you. If I make eye contact, then I'll feel guilty, right? That's what we do. Or we go to the other side of the street. And they would do this too in Israel, right? People would be begging on the street corner, and I don't want to look at that person. Because if I look at them, then my conscience is going to be twinged, and then I'll feel bad. And he who hides his eyes will get many a curse. Proverbs 11, 24 through 26. One gives freely, yet grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give and only suffers once. Whoever brings blessings will be enriched, and the one who waters himself will be watered. But people curse him who holds back grain, but a blessing is on the head of him who sells it. This would be talking about in times of famine, right? Those who he only wanted for himself, but those people needed it. What is he saying? Again, similar idea, right? It is more blessed to give than to receive is the way that Jesus put it, being the importance of being generous with our money. And we can avoid the pitfalls and the traps of being wealthy, which I would say probably 80% of the people in this room, it's hard to say, relative wealth. You should read some studies on relative wealth throughout history sometime. I'd say probably 70 to 80% of the people in this room, astronomically wealthy by Israelite standards. If you measure buying power as the ability to buy more than you need, I mean, how much stuff do we have that we don't need? Just think about your own life. How much stuff do you have that you don't need? That, if you measure wealth by that metric, we're all very, not all, but most of us are very wealthy, by that metric at least. And what? How would we avoid the pitfalls of that wealth? By being generous, right? Now, ultimately, money is not the problem. We talked about this last week. Money is amoral. It has no inherent rightness, or it just is a thing. It just exists. Money, it's a means of buying things. It has no inherent value. The money that I have, I have more money in my wallet tonight. This money, what do I have tonight? Do I have a 10 probably? Ooh, I even have a $20 bill. Look at that thing. What is this doing for me? Nothing. I can't even use it as a blanket. I guess I could use it to wipe up a spill if I spilled my drink. Then no practical value. Only value in what I purchase with it, right? That's the only value it has, in what I purchase with it. So again, money is not the problem. The way we think about money is the problem. And that's, I think, at the heart of what Solomon observes about humanity. The way we think about it is the problem. Solomon's observations are all over the place. Sometimes he says people care too much about money. Sometimes he says they care too little. Sometimes he says we're ill-prepared and sometimes too stingy. Sometimes we're too worried about losing our money. Sometimes we don't give it away enough. All of these observations, we need to work hard. We need to be generous. But really, at the base level, we need to alter the way we think about money. So we're going to look at the final two threads in Solomon's writings about money, the final two sort of through lines through Proverbs. First is the impermanence of money. Proverbs 11, 28, whoever trusts his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like a green leaf. 18:10-12, the name of the Lord is a strong tower, a righteous... I actually really like this verse, the imagery of it. The name of the Lord is a strong tower, a righteous man runs into it and is safe. The rich man's wealth, his wealth is his strong city, like a high wall in his imagination. Before destruction, a man's heart is haughty. Humility comes before honor. Now he's making a contrast here. The name of the Lord and riches. These are the two contrasts, right? The righteous person runs to the name of the Lord. It's a strong tower. It is firm. It is secure. It cannot be overcome. The rich man trusts in his riches, right? He's haughty. Oh, I have all that I need. What could possibly happen to me? I'm so super wealthy. And what does Solomon say? It's like a high wall in his imagination. It's ephemeral. It does not exist. He's imagining it. It just is in his mind that he is secure. He's not really secure. It's a high wall that he's built up in his imagination, something that he is envisioning for himself that is not real or concrete or tangible, that has no effect. Whoever trusts in his riches will fall. The rich people die, just like the poor people. We're going to read this in a couple of places. The rich people get sick just like the poor people. The rich people have disaster just like the poor people. The rich people get robbed more than the poor people, I would say. Now, yes, being wealthy allows you to mitigate some of these things, obviously, but at the end of the day, money is nothing. It's not going to last. Maybe the money you have lasts your whole life, and that'd be great. But then you're going to face judgment, and that high tower you've built in your imagination is going to poof when you stand before the Lord, is it not? We're going to read a couple more verses about this. An inheritance gained hastily in the beginning will not be blessed in the end. Wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it. A stingy man hastens after wealth, and does not know that poverty will come upon him. What? Being hasty, the hastiness of it, right? The rapid accumulation of wealth. And what does he say in each case? He who hastens after wealth, he who gains wealth rapidly as opposed to little by little increasing it, what? It's not going to do any good. Poverty will come upon him. It will not be blessed in the end. It will dwindle. How many times has a person thought to themselves, if only I won the lottery, right? That's the ever-present hope of the lottery. I'm going to win. I don't know. What's it up to now? I should have looked it up before today. If there's some sort of Oklahoma lottery, I'm sure. Let's say it's up to $300 million. Man, if only I could win $300 million. And what that would solve in my life, all the problems that would go away. Have you ever actually, and I said this last week, you really should think about this. Go look up what happens to lottery winners. 90% of them are poorer in a year than they were at the beginning. They lose it all. They spend it all in what is the first few verses we read in Proverbs? Suddenly everybody comes out of the woodwork because they want to take from them, and suddenly after... Very suddenly, I'm sure, to them, they have no money again. Millions of dollars will not solve your problems. It won't fix your marriage. It won't raise your kids. It won't prevent you from getting any sort of horrible disease. It's not going to make you right with God. It's not going to improve your friendships. In fact, I would imagine that winning millions of dollars has much more likely to hurt your friendships. It's not going to make you a better person. And at the end of the day, you'll have it for a while, and then it'll be gone, and that'll be it. What did it do for you? Instead of loving money, Solomon has a lot to say about what we should care instead about. What should we focus on instead? What matters more? What is better than money? We're going to read a lot of verses about this. Excuse me. 15:15-17. All the days of the afflicted are evil, but the cheerful of heart has a continual feast. Better is a little with fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble with it. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than the fattened ox and hatred with it. I would much rather have good relationships. People I love. People that I like to be around. People that make me cheerful than to be wealthy. Better is a little with righteousness than great revenues with injustice. We're going to see a lot of common themes in these. The fear of the Lord, righteousness, those are things that will last forever. And therefore they have more value by any calculation. However you want to run the math, if you want to be very utilitarian about it and say, okay, righteousness provides X amount of value per day. Let's say whatever value you want to put there. 1 cent of value a day. That's what righteousness provides. Let's say wickedness provides $1 million a day. If you're wicked, you can get $1 million of value a day. You know what 1 cent times infinity is? It's more than 80 times a million. And you could lower whatever value of righteousness, you could lower that as much as you want, and it would still end up more than the value of wickedness because righteousness has value for forever. So however you want to run that calculation, it's always going to come out in favor of righteousness. Always. No matter how little it seems to bring you in this life, it will still matter more. How much better to get wisdom than gold? To get understanding is to be chosen rather than silver. Because as we've seen, right, those who are not wise, those who don't have understanding, sure, they get gold, they get silver, and then they waste it, and it's all gone. If you have a little bit, and you're wise with it, you're understanding with it, you'll end up in a much better place than if you had a lot and were an idiot or stupid with it, wasteful with it. It's better to be wise. And again, why? Wisdom, understanding, those are going to help you in your relationships and your parenting and your work and your friendships, right? All of these areas of life are going to be affected by wisdom and understanding in a positive way where wealth and riches is, I guess you could buy new friends. Like they would be really good friends. What are the next few verses? Proverbs 16:19. It is better to be of lowly spirit with the poor than divide the spoil with the proud. 17:1. Better is a dry morsel with quiet than a house full of feasting with strife. 19:22. What is desired in a man is steadfast love. A poor man is better than a liar. 20:15, there is gold and abundance of costly stones, but the lips of knowledge are a precious jewel. 28:6, better is a poor man who walks in integrity than a rich man who is crooked in his ways. We have a lot of different, and really they fall into three categories. One is your personality, how you treat people, right? The way that we think about ourselves. And what does he keep saying? Lowly in spirit, humble. These are better things than being rich. And to be fair, you could be of lowly spirit and still be rich. That is a thing that is possible to do. It's harder, but you could do that still. What is the second thing? Relationships. Man, it's better to have good relationships than to be wealthy. Because even if you're not wealthy, even if you end up being poor, the relationships that we form, hopefully in the church, they'll mitigate that, right? We're helping one another. We're supporting one another. We're providing what each other needs because of this good relationship that is built on the bedrock of our relationship with Christ. Good relationships. And what does he say this in a couple ways? Quiet instead of strife. Man, I am thankful that my house is not full of strife. And I know that if I had more money, it would be more likely to be full of strife. That's just how it tends to go, right? And then the third thing is the knowledge, right? We see this again. The lips of knowledge are a precious jewel more than gold and costly stones. We're going to end with this one, 22:1-2. A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. Favor is better than silver or gold. And this is the conclusion of Solomon's musings on money. The rich and poor meet together. The Lord is the maker of them all. Now, I don't think he had really any idea of judgment. He had some idea of judgment, but you can tell in Ecclesiastes, you read Ecclesiastes, Solomon does not have a good understanding of the afterlife. He just doesn't. He does not have a well developed idea of what's coming after death. But this statement, Proverbs 22, it's almost like God knows what he's doing when he's inspiring the Bible. We look at this through the lens of the knowledge that we have. When do the rich and poor meet together? Maybe here, but they're all going to meet in judgment. We're all going to be in a giant, I don't know if it's going to be a room. We're all going to be in one place, standing before the judgment seat. All of us will be there, meeting our Maker, and it will not matter if you are rich or poor. It will not matter if you had abundance or lack. It will not matter. What will matter? Were you righteous? Were you humble? Were you kind? Were you of lowly spirit? Did you treat people well? Were you greedy? Did you love money more than you loved God? Were you stingy? Were you generous to the poor? Did you help those who needed help? That's what's going to matter when we stand in judgment, the rich and the poor meeting together. So at the end of the day and the end of life, money will not matter. Wealth will not matter. Be generous, yes. Work hard. Be diligent. Work hard so you can support your family. Work hard so you can support other people. But do so because it's righteous and not because wealth is the goal. Even as we work hard, we can have a skewed view of working hard and think working hard is the end goal and I need to accumulate as much wealth as I can and that leads me to work 80 hours a week and now look, I haven't raised my kids. It's not just about working hard. That's not the goal. The goal is to be righteous in money as well as all of these other areas of life, which is why Solomon says so much that all of these other things of life matter so much more than money because they're going to affect much more of our eternal destination than money will.